Okay, so the pasuk we're doing is Mishle Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Beis. Okay, 10-12. And we're going to do it with two different pshatim. One is the pshat of Mitzudos David and Rabbeinu Yonah, which learn the same way. And the other is with Rashi. We'll do Rashi second. But first, I'm going to give you guys a crack at it to see how original you guys can be. If you want, you can cheat. It's up to you. Okay. Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Beis. Sina te'orer medanim. Okay. So, hatred is awakened. That's the key. But let's see. I'll translate in a way that's going to go Mitzu this way. Hatred awakens fighting. Okay, there's another way to translate. I think Rashi is sin. Hatred is awakened by fighting. Okay, but let's stick with the simpler, the more direct shot, is that hatred awakens fighting. Okay, the al kol peshoim techase ava, and over all transgressions, all sins, love covers up. Okay, covers up what? Okay, good question. What does it cover up? Well, presumably covers up the
sins.
The sins, yeah.
Is it a focus between Sarasar and Rashi, like the chicken and egg situation?
You had to read the pasuk. Okay? Yeah, I mean, you can call it chicken egg, but they're learning a little differently. It's not really machlokas in Mishle. It's not like machlokas in the Gemara. You're not trying to define both sides. There's just two different psukim. Treat them like two different psukim. Okay, it's not a machlokas like you want to define the machlokas. There's like every pasuk in Mishle lends itself to multiple interpretations, so they have different interpretations. It's almost like we're doing two psukim tonight. It's a bonus. Okay.
Aaron, could you read the pasuk again? I don't have a text in front of me.
Yeah. Don't worry. I always read it a couple times. Okay, but one more time. Sinat orer medanim. So hatred awakens fighting. Stirs up. Hatred stirs up fighting. Ba'kol peshaim techas ava. And love covers up all sins. All transgressions. So hatred awakens fighting. And love covers up all transgressions. What's love? That's a good question, Ariel. Excellent question.
What kind of
love? Okay.
And what kind of transgressions, man?
What kind of transgressions? All transgressions. Love covers up all transgressions.
Think about a Zara.
Even about the Zara, yeah. We'll see. It does, actually, that's one of the examples. Love covers up all transgressions, everything. So hatred awakens fighting. Sinatar madanim. But over all transgressions, love covers up. Okay? So what's the pshat in this pasuk? Okay, fine. So let's get down to Jay's pshat first, then we'll get Ariel's. The first Jay wanted to say that if you have a proper perspective on people, then you'll see them as fundamentally, most of the time, in general, as good people, and you're going to love them because you're not going to pick on, you're not going to isolate their individual flaws, but you'll see them as a whole, and you're going to love them, and then you'll have the healthy, proper perspective. But if you have a distorted perspective, people, you're going to focus and harp on their flaws, and that's going to cause you to hate them, and that will lead to fighting. Okay, it assumes that in general, if you look at people and with a proper perspective, you'll love them and not hate them, because you'll see people as a whole are fundamentally good. Okay, not everybody, but people as a whole. Ariel disagrees with that postulate, and he learns differently. Ariel wants to say that it's coming to teach you two bad extremes. Okay, is that an emotion of hatred or love can distort the way you look at a person. If you love a person, like a person loves their son, so then even if the son's a murderer, so then he's going to ignore the fact that he loves him anyway, and he can't see the evil in the person. Because his love distorts the way he views the person. It can't be objective. And likewise, if you hate somebody, your enemy, so then you're not going to be able to see the good in them. And I guess that's going to lead to fighting. And you're going to I guess similar to the way Jay said there, that you're going to blow them out of perspective and you're going to start fights with them because you hate them and you have a distorted picture of them, and that caused you to not be honest with who they are and what they did and cause you to fight. Okay, good. But Tukum Shatam. Okay. I think Mitsudos is like probably closer to Ariel, but we'll see. Because let's read the Mitsudos. Okay. Like this. Sina. Hasina Shiyesh Adam Ami. So the hatred that a person has for somebody else. He Moreres Medanim. Lasos Meriva. Ulahakbir al Davarkal. So that's what arouses fighting, quarreling, in order to start an argument, and to be cupid, to be particular, sensitive, and cupid. What's a good translation of cupid? You're makbid. You care. Yeah, you care about it. On even the small little things, it bothers you. It annoys you. It's even it's a little thing. Aval ahavas adam chaveiro, but a person's love for his friend, the chas al kol devar pesha, covers up every transgression. Leval yakbid afal davar kasha, he doesn't care, doesn't bother him, even something that is really significant, really a big deal. He loves him, so he overlooks it. Yeah, go ahead.
What happens to kol pesha?
Kol pesha means afal davar kasha, even if it's a really big deal. He'll overlook it, even no matter how bad the transgression is. If one person loves another person, so then he overlooks any bad thing he might have done to him.
Is he saying that he will become makbid though? Al davar kasha? Let me see what he's saying.
He's saying if you... Leval yakbid means not to be kapid.
You leval.
I have leval. What do you have?
Aval.
Aval? Oh, no, that makes... difference. Yeah, that makes no sense. Okay, Laval is a better translation there. You can answer that. That answers the problem, right?
Yeah.
So then you just have to change the gear, son. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So Mitsudos. Okay, so... okay. So it's like this. Okay, we'll try to get a little bit into a little deeper shot. Is that basically the underlying... Right? So Mitsudos, we get pshat the Mitsudos, right? Is that if you hate somebody, then even little things they do that annoy you, that will bother you, you'll be makbid, you're going to care about it, you're not going to let it go, and you'll start fighting about the stupid little things that they do. Okay? And it's why? It's not because those little things really are a big deal. Is it worth getting into a fight about? No, it's not worth getting into a fight about. You know? Like, for example, let's say these metal detector things, you know, right now in Israel with the Anhara bias. It's like these stupid little things that they're fighting about. Okay, whether you have a metal detector or not, okay, I don't know, maybe it's a bigger deal. But fundamentally, when two people hate each other, or two peoples hate each other, then every little thing becomes a fight. Okay, because the fight is really just an expression of the hatred. The hatred is there, and it's looking for an outlet. And what it does is it takes little things, and it blows them out of proportion, because those little things become symbols, or... avenues, places where the hatred can manifest itself. You're looking for a fight because you hate the person and you want to find something to hate about them. So the little things that they do that annoy you become things that cause fights. But it's not because the little thing is such a big deal. By definition, it's a little thing, not a big deal. But it becomes an outlet for the aggression, for the hatred. Okay. But the opposite is that when you love somebody, so if they do something to you that really is terrible, or they have tremendous flaws, so your love for them, this is closer to what Ari was saying, your love for them, it changes the way you view them. You're blinded by love. Love blinds a person to the flaws that the other person has. That's why when people fall in love, they don't notice each other's flaws. But then as they're married longer, and the love might, you know, the romantic love goes away to some degree, so then all of a sudden, you know, they notice the flaws that weren't there when they were dating, when they were newlyweds, because the love blinds them. They can't see the objective flaws in the other person, and they're surprised, right? And then if you have a sinna between two people, then all of a sudden the little annoying things they did that when you love them, It was amazing. Who cares? You can completely ignore them. Even big things you completely ignored. But the hatred becomes the outlet, and all those little things create tremendous fights. Okay? But it's not just with people. It's with objects also. Meaning if you love a car, so you love it, so you overlook any of the particular problems it has. When a person loves anything, okay, so he has, you know, a certain amount of positive energy going to it, okay? If we're going to use a Freudian term, libido, you have a love attached to the object, attached to the person. And when that energy, when that libido attaches itself to something, it causes an idealization of the thing. You view it as like a perfect thing. Okay, it's a process of idealizing thing. You look at it as like it's amazing, has no blemishes. You can't see the flaws. You can't see the peshaim. Whether it's just the flaws the car has, or it's the flaws another person has that you love, like Ariel's case of, you know, a parent who loves the child, can't see the fact that they're a murderer, can't recognize that they're an evil person. Or it's ultimately towards a person's self. The reason why, like we were discussing the past week or two, why you can't notice your own flaws fundamentally comes from the fact that you love yourself. Okay, you love yourself more than you love the car, more than you love your friend, right? You love yourself more than anybody else, right? It's called narcissism. So because you love yourself, that exact same phenomenon that occurs when you love somebody else or love an object, that you're unable to see its flaws, your love for yourself blinds you to your own flaws. Okay, so the more you know, it's just that's the phenomenon, love. When you have this positive energy going to something, psychologically it blinds you, makes you unable to perceive any of the defects in the thing. And the person's love for himself causes him to be unable to see, right, unable to see his own flaws. And that's the highest degree of this phenomenon. Like the Ramban says of Ahavta Kamocha, he says, how is it possible for a person to love somebody else as much as themselves? Right? How is that possible? It's impossible. And in fact, he says, you're right, it is impossible. It can't be the mitzvah, because God cannot be telling you to love somebody as much as you love yourself. Right? He learns it differently. He says, V'Ahavta Kamocha means that you just like when you love yourself, you want yourself to have all the good stuff in the world. You want yourself to have money, to have wisdom, to have health, without any limit. Your love for yourself is to the point there's no limit. So too, right? There's no how much money should you have. You love yourself as much as it possibly can. That's how much you love yourself. To ad bili die, there's no end. So, but that's how you should love your friend. That you should love him to the point that you want good stuff for him. And if he has more money than you, it doesn't matter. You shouldn't limit him. I want him to have good stuff, but just so long as he doesn't have more than me. So sweet. That's the mitzvah. Don't make it that you love him to the point that so long as his house isn't as big as mine, so long as he doesn't have much money as me, so long as he's not healthy and I'm unhealthy, so long as you don't that shouldn't be, you shouldn't have a jealous love for a person such that he is not competing. You should look at it as you and him are separate, and insofar as it doesn't affect you, you should have free love and want good things for him. That's the mitzvah according to Ramban. That's a little bit of a sidetrack. The point is, it's impossible for a person to love somebody else as much as themselves. So, v'akol peshon techas ava, ultimately, in the greatest degree, is your love for yourself. And you can't see in your flaws in yourself. Then it's your love for another person, your spouse. You can't see a true love for your spouse. You can't recognize their flaws, and they do something wrong to you. And you overlook it. The love covers it all up. Okay, it's the real... we're talking about here a certain... the power of narcissism, person's love for themselves, also when it's the romantic love for a spouse. Okay, that's the that certain emotion, that psychic energy that goes to that person that really accomplishes this. And then for objects also, things that you love, you don't see any flaws. Okay, but when you hate somebody, the opposite is true. Everything becomes a flaw. Even something stupid, little stupid things, become. They become like reasons and justifications for your hatred for them. It's like you're looking for the hatred, the aggression needs an expression. So it finds things to justify why you hate them and how you can get an outlet for the hatred by getting into a fight with them over stupid little things. Okay? Now I should have one little story to tell you on this. But I had this... So my neighbor's been doing construction. Okay. I don't hate my neighbor, but it's you'll see. Okay. He's been doing construction next door to me. Okay. So construction is very noisy. Okay. It's very noisy. It is. It's noise, you know. And so it's like, you know, if I want to take, let's say, a nap in the middle of the day, okay, it's very noisy. I can't take a nap, and it's very annoying. I'm trying to learn. So the noise, it drives you crazy, okay, and it drives you crazy. And you think, okay, well, it kind of makes sense. It's, like, very loud. They're hammering. They're sawing. It's loud. And in a sense, it makes sense to a certain degree. You think it makes sense that I can't sleep. It's bothering me, right? It's very loud and noisy, and you can't sleep. But, you know, now I started doing construction the past month or two, you know, and it's much louder. It's like right above me, and they're hammering and they're sawing, and it's, you know, really loud. And I'm sleeping right through it. It's like amazing, you know, because I'm happy they're working, because they're working on my house. And I'm just happy they're showing up for work. And I'm listening to that sound. That's the sound of them working and finishing and, you know, and doing the construction on my house, you know. And that sound, I can sleep right through it. It's much louder. In theory, it's more annoying, but it doesn't bother me at all. Okay, but for my neighbor, I have certain unconscious emotions. I'm not going to go through it over here with you. But you don't like a guy building his house right next to yours. Is it going to be a bigger house? Who knows, right? So you have that sinna, the underlying sinna, especially when it's unconscious, especially if the hatred for it is repressed, because you can't admit to yourself that you don't want another guy to have a bigger house than you. Who cares? What's the difference to you, right? That's a kind of thing that you can't rationalize to yourself. Doesn't make sense why it should bother you that somebody else's house is going to be, you know, blocking your son. Well, that may you be able to explain. But all the different things, especially when you repress the aggression, the hatred. So then what it does is it needs to find a conscious expression. So it finds little things. It finds little things and it attaches itself to them. Okay, so I mean that's what I wanted to highlight with this point. Especially when there's an unconscious hatred and aggression, it will always manifest itself by little things, by these little things that become the conscious expression of the hatred. And all when if there's somebody who just annoys you, you find them an annoying person, and you think you don't hate them, but they're annoying to you, all the different things are annoying, what's going on is the fact that you do hate them, and you can't admit it to yourself. Probably because it's a petty thing that you hate them, because for you to hate them would be an imperfection in you. Right, so for me, if I say I don't like my neighbor building a house because I don't want him to have a bigger house than me, so I look at that as that's an imperfection of myself. Right? It shouldn't bother you what somebody else says. What does it matter to you how big his house is? Either way, your house is your house. What's there in somebody else? So if there's a flaw that you have that you don't want to acknowledge because you love yourself, okay, so you love yourself, you can't acknowledge a flaw. What that causes you to do is now you can't admit it to yourself that you don't like your neighbor building a bigger house than you. And because you can't admit it, that aggression, that hatred has to find an expression somewhere. So now it becomes the noise. He's making noise. He's disturbing you. And that drives you crazy. Now, why can't I sleep? Because that I'm angry. I'm annoyed. They're hammering all the time. It's the sawing. Right? So, it's fundamentally, it's the repressed hatred and aggression that has to find an expression. Okay, because, and the reason why it's repressed is because a person's love for themselves covers up the fact that they really have a hatred to somebody else. I guess that's the first thing, is when you, somebody's really annoying, and it's because, and you don't hate them, the reason they're annoying is because you do hate them. Okay, you do hate them, and you can't acknowledge it. Yeah, go ahead, Yaakov.
So what causes sin in the first place, then?
What causes sin?
Well,
that's a good example. What causes sin is the fact that he's building a bigger house than you. You hate him. Why is he building a bigger house? Your house used to be bigger. The biggest house. And now he's bigger than you.
Right. That's what I was saying, that it's a sin that causes you to look for all the negative things in the first place. Right?
Yes. Well, the sin, yeah. Because it's looking, the hatred is looking for a way to express itself consciously.
Right. So what causes the sin?
What causes sin? Many different causes. Jealousy. Just stomp jealousy.
Right.
You're jealous of a person.
Then
you hate them. You're jealous of them. You want bad things to happen to them so that they don't have more than you. Especially if you can't admit that. Especially if you can't admit to yourself you're jealous. Then you repress it. Then you don't acknowledge it. You're not consciously aware of the fact that you hate them. That's especially where this pasuk comes out. Where now you're just going to seek to pick little fights with them so that you can have an outlet for the hatred for them. If you could arrive at a recognition that you do hate them, that you are jealous of them, that they bother you, that's it, then somehow then you'll be able to sit with it. Then the hatred, you'll be much more in control of not picking fights and not getting upset about little things. To a certain degree, you're going to still, if you hate them, you're just going to, even if you're aware that you hate them, you're still going to pick fights with them. Just because you need an outlet, you know, unless, you know, if you can't just walk up to a guy and punch him. So instead you get annoyed, you know, and you speak lashon hara about them behind their back and make fun of the way they talk. That way they talk, it's just annoying. You can't stand the way they talk with that voice and the way they pronounce their R's and their S's, and it drives you crazy. And, you know, these little stupid things that when you like somebody, it doesn't bother you at all. But when you hate somebody, that becomes the things that your mind grabs hold of and they drive you crazy. Okay, so it's the aggression and the hatred needs an outlet. It attaches itself to little things. But when you love somebody, something, the opposite occurs. All the big things become completely covered up. You don't even notice it. And you rationalize, you justify. When you love somebody, you justify why they did something wrong. You come up with excuses for them. Just like you do for yourself. You rationalize why do I hate this guy? Oh, because he's disturbing the peace. You find explanations when you love yourself to justify your behavior, why there's nothing wrong with it. You can't see flaws in yourself. Right? Yeah, go ahead.
Right. About the Avodanim, why does Isina need that expression? I can't just stop at finding little things and adding that onto the negative image. I mean, we don't seem to... It doesn't seem like he's pausing that, but the Abba... He doesn't say the person loves another person is going to be like super friendly towards him, you know?
No, it is by the Ava, you want to maintain a friendship with the person. You love them.
Right.
So, but how do you justify being friends with the person when they just can't, they screw you? They take advantage of you.
Right.
Right? They don't treat you properly. How do you do that? How do you justify that? Well, you overlook the fact they weren't really taking advantage of you. They really needed something. And they didn't screw you. They just didn't realize. So you want to maintain the friendship. You want to maintain the relationship. So you have to cover up all their flaws in order to remain in the relationship. When you want to maintain the relationship, you got to pretend somehow, find some way to justify and rationalize away a person's flaws so that you can maintain that relationship. But when you want to hate somebody, you got to justify how you're going to hate them and how you're going to find an expression. The hatred and aggression, it needs an outlet.
Why is that?
Why
can't you just stop hating him internally? Why does it actually lead to outward strife?
Why, when you hate somebody, can't you just stop hating them?
Yeah, why? Yeah. No.
Why can't you just not act on it, you mean?
Yeah, why doesn't that actually lead to the fighting?
I mean, it just... I don't know if I have a better answer than the way your psyche is constructed is it has certain energy. Positive energy, negative energy. That it's your psychic energy. You have your mental energy that needs satisfaction. It's like why do you you know, if you have a desire for for certain nice things, right? Well, you'll feel frustrated if you don't have them. If you want cookies and you don't eat them, you know, I'm not saying you're starving until you eat, you know, meat and potatoes, but you want the cookies. So you're going to feel frustrated. When you have energy that seeks... Your natural psychological disposition is to seek satisfaction. It wants to be satisfied in the real world. And if it's frustrated, that bothers you. And you don't like to be frustrated. You don't like to be bothered. So the way you satisfy your energy is by if you're aggressive... You know, you hate another guy, you have aggression. You could be frustrated if you control yourself. That'll frustrate you. That's painful. An easier way is to find some excuse... to actually hate him and to justify it, to get into a fight, that creates an outlet. This is the psychological mechanism that allows people to stay together when they don't really like each other. They build up aggression towards each other, right? A married couple, they don't really hate each other, but they need to stay together for the kids for whatever reason. So they need an outlet for their aggression. So what they do is they get into a fight about a stupid thing. If you left the dishes on the counter, you're supposed to put it away. You know, or, you know, you didn't close the door. You know, you should have said you didn't close the door. And they get into these stupid fights. But that allows them, the fights are an outlet for their aggression. So then it relieves the frustration and allows them to go on for a long period of time until it builds up again and they get into another fight. So this is the psyche's method of coping and satisfying you know, anger and hatred, so that the relationship, you know, the functional relationship that they have to have can go on. You have to satisfy one way or another, your energy, your psychical energy will be satisfied. Either if it's conscious, you'll do it consciously. If it's unconscious, you'll find some sort of way. You know, you'll by accident throw a ball that will slip out of your hand and hit them in the face. By accident, you know. So it won't be conscious, but you'll have to find, your unconscious is very clever, and it will find ways to, you know, to get the other guy if you have aggression towards them.
Right.
So are you saying it's normal for a couple to fight?
I'm saying there's we have two extreme examples of couples. Couples that love each other, couples that hate each other. There's obviously things in the middle where they love and hate each other simultaneously. That's also possible. But the pasuk is dealing with, we're just saying, two couples. One that loves each other, then they can't recognize, we'll call them the newlyweds, okay? Even though it's a little bit of a cynical approach towards marriage, but just, you know, to give you, you know. And then you have, and then they can't see any flaws in each other, blinded by love. Then there's a couple that that hates each other, that they really should be getting divorced, but they're staying together for whatever reason. And then they have to periodically go through this relieving, the frustration of the hatred, you know. And if you think you love somebody, but you find yourself constantly being annoyed and getting to fight to them, what is going on is you really have a hatred and aggression towards them. Hatred, when you say psychologically, a lot of people will think hatred is such a terrible word. I mean, I don't hate people. No, I mean, hatred means, you know, you really don't like them. That's what you mean. It's a psychological term. It means you have something that bothers you about them. You have a certain aggression towards them. You don't know exactly what it is. You're not conscious of it. You think you love them, but that, in fact, that is, we'll take it, the middle couple, the couple that loves each other and hates each other. So very often what will happen is the love, the fact that they love each other, in reality, causes them not to be able to admit to themselves that they hate each other also. There's nothing wrong in the psyche with having ambivalence where you simultaneously love somebody and hate somebody. But to our adult mind, that's very strange, how you can love somebody and hate somebody. So what will happen is consciously you'll love them, and unconsciously you'll hate them also, both. That's because, do you know what I'm saying? It becomes a tarkti asasi, contradictions to our rational mind seem impossible, right? That you can't have both A and not A. Love is the opposite of hate. How could you love somebody and hate them at the same time? But it's in psychologically, there's no problem whatsoever loving something and hating something simultaneously. Contradictions are the hallmark of the unconscious psyche. There's no ration. There's a logic to the unconscious, but it's not the logic of the conscious mind. The unconscious mind, contradictions can exist side by side without being the least affected by the other. So what happens is if you love somebody and hate somebody, very often your hatred will be driven down to the unconscious level, repressed. And you won't be aware of the fact that you hate them. But it will be a symptom. There will be a symptom to the hatred, and that symptom will be fighting. You'll get into fights with them. So that's what it is when you, if you love somebody, but you see you're constantly annoyed by the little things that they do. What's really going on is there's something about them that bothers you. It doesn't have to be a general hatred of the personality. It could be something about them that they did to you. That's, you know, you didn't take your revenge on them yet. You know, something that making you jealous. You feel like they insulted you in something, they embarrassed you the other day, something that they did to make you mad, and you can't admit it because you want to maintain the fact that you love them, and to you that seems incompatible. So now your hatred for them is unconscious, and what will happen is it needs a satisfaction. So you get into these petty little fights in order to relieve and to relieve that frustration of the hatred and the aggression.
What's the solution?
The solution is when you see that happening to be aware that it doesn't really make sense. It's disproportionate. Is like with my neighbor, there is a sense to why I can't sleep. The hammer is going. The hammer, the saw. Okay? But the fact that you have to be very careful. You have to be sensitive to quantities. It's disproportionate. Very often, the way your psyche will trick you is it's not stupid. Your psyche is very smart in finding things that kind of make sense. It kind of makes sense that I can't sleep because somebody's hammering or sawing. That kind of makes sense. But you see, it's not true. It's blown out of proportion. The fact that I can't take a nap at all, it's ridiculous, no matter what. It was blown out of proportion, how much it bothers me. So you have to be sensitive. Is my response, internal response, to what somebody did, the fact that they're pronouncing the words in a funny way, the fact that that really bothers me, is that proportionate to how that thing really is? When you're really annoyed and bothers you about somebody, does it really make sense, the quantity of how much it bothers you? Such a thing as being annoyed, oh, something's a little annoying, but are you really annoyed for something that's a little annoying? If you recognize that, then you have to think, well, why am I so annoyed? Maybe there's something else going on here that's caused me to be so annoyed. And when you see that, you have to think into it a little bit. And very quickly, if you learn the trick of free associating, if you learn the trick of just trying to be honest, it basically just means being honest with yourself. And you have to learn how to free up your mind in terms of, you know, you get good at it as you practice, okay? But you learn to what exactly about them is bothering me. There's something else going on here. And you realize what they did. Once it becomes conscious, you become aware of it, you're not going to, you'll find a different way to deal with the situation. What you really should do is you say, go to them in private, like we discussed, you know, 2 weeks ago. You say, hey, you know, the other day you embarrassed me when in front of my friends, and that really bothered me. Why did you do that? You know, and then they'll say, you know, you're right. I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry. Hopefully, if they, you know, they'll apologize. And once they apologize, you realize, they say, I didn't do it. I'm sorry. I didn't realize, you know, and I won't do it again. And then you hopefully you can forgive them, you know. But if you don't recognize why you are so mad at them, and you repress it, and you ignore it, then you're going to get into these little fights, and you're not going to be aware of the hatred. And eventually, the little fights will satisfy the anger. Eventually, it'll go away. But it will have an expression. You will not be able to avoid taking it out on them. Which is why you should also know, when you do something to somebody, if you harm them, you harm them in one way or another, they're going to get you back. Whether they get you back intentionally, consciously, or unconsciously, they will get you back. Because a person, you know, loves themselves, and they feel that when they're slighted, something you did something to them, they feel the need that creates an aggression. You harm somebody they love, themselves, they want to take revenge, and especially if they're not conscious of it, they're going to get you back one way or the other. They could save it up for a long time. Okay, so it's something to keep in mind, that even if you think they're a good person, they're not going to take revenge to you intentionally. If it's unconscious, unless they're like a real perfected individual, real Talmid Chacham, they're going to get you back one way or another. Just another reason not to, you know, and people have a way. They speak Lashon Hara about you by accident, not realizing, right? They'll speak good about you in front of your enemy. Do you know that whole type of Lashon Hara? Whatever. Okay, fine. They'll find ways to get you back. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
How do you figure out the actual objective quantity of things that bother you?
You have to have a sense. You have to be honest. You just have a sense that just because they, you know, like I said, just because they make that sound when they eat their food, it shouldn't drive you crazy. Do you know when they make that sound, how annoying that sound? If it's that sound is just drives you crazy when they're doing it, especially if somebody else who you like does that and it doesn't really bother you. You have to look for these inconsistencies. Somebody else does it, you have no problem with them. A stranger does it, doesn't really bother you. But this person, who ostensibly your friend, your best friend, does it, drives you crazy. Well, that doesn't make any sense. If the sound objectively drives you crazy, so then it should. It's like with me. When did I notice it? I noticed it when all of a sudden in my house I'm doing construction, and the hammer is going, the saw is going, and I'm singing, I'm sleeping like a baby. It's amazing. I love hearing that sound. Okay. Because then all of a sudden I realize, well, this is a little strange. This is even louder. This is more disruptive, more annoying. Because generally annoying is that term we tell ourselves. Nothing's really annoying. Annoying is that word almost that I'm covering up something that really bothers me by making an excuse, a davar kal, small little thing to justify my hatred and to give an expression, to pick a little fight. Okay, so you have to be aware. You have to be honest. Is it disproportionate? You have a sense. Like, once you realize the negative consequences that happens for when you do this, we haven't really discussed what are the negative consequences that happens when you do this. But well, let's take that up first, and then we'll is first of all, if you when you love somebody and you can't see their flaws, right? That's in a sense clear. What happens is then you get into, let's say, the case of a person dating, right? You fall in love, and it's a, like I said, the romantic kind of love, the psychological love, where there's a click, there's a transference, the person, you know, stirs something up and that awakens the love for you. You for them, them for you. And then you can't see their flaws. So that could be lead to negative consequence if you're unaware of that fact, that you, if it's disproportionate how much you love them, or, you know, you have to be aware that now you might not be able to see their flaws. And if you want to get married to them, there might be a real flaw. They might have a flaw that say they don't want you, they don't really like learning, they don't think learning is so important. But you love them, and you can overlook that. Is that really such a big deal? I mean, I do think learning is important, but, you know, I used to think it was more important, maybe not so much anymore. So you have to be careful. Is that something that really could matter? They have a significant flaw that could really ruin your life. And if you love them, then you're not going to be honest about it. And that love goes away. That initial love of the newlywed goes away over time. And then all of a sudden, that flaw is going to really come into ruining your life. And it's going to create a real problem for you. So, I mean, when you... Same thing with yourself. If you love yourself and you can't see your own flaws, it's going to cause you again to fight with somebody. Somebody's going to criticize you. You're never going to admit it. And you're never going to be able to correct your own flaws because you don't have any flaws. You're perfect. Because you love yourself, so you're perfect. So it prevents you from doing tshuva, right? And really improving yourself. So that's... So this, you know... And then similarly with the sinna to our madanim is you're going to get into fights with a lot of people over stupid little things, and people are going to look at you like you're a petty person. Your reputation will suffer, and you're gonna constantly be bickering and fighting, and because you're not able to deal honestly and maturely with the real hatred that you have for somebody, and you can't deal with it by speaking to them, asking them why they tochacha, like we spoke like last 2 weeks ago, whatever, is you don't deal with it in a mature way where you speak to them privately and ask them why they did it to you. Rather, you ignore it, and you end up in fights. So you ruin the relationship. The relationship will deteriorate. As opposed to if you were honest and you had just one conversation could solve a lot of problems. If you're honest with yourself and you're honest with the other person about how you feel, as opposed to covering it up and repressing the hatred, and leads to fights. So, I mean, what you do initially is you're studying the psyche and you're seeing the consequences that happen if you ignore the wisdom of the pasuk. And then you realize, hey, next time, like it behooves me to try to be aware of myself, and when I'm getting annoyed with somebody disproportionate, when it doesn't really make sense, or be aware that when you love somebody, to try to still be objective, realize that you're going to distort things, and realize that if you ignore the wisdom of the pasuk, you're going to ruin your life. Bad things will happen to you. That's just the way God made the world. God made the world in a way where if you ignore chachma, you ignore psychological wisdom about yourself, about others, about human beings, then you'll have negative consequences, which is what Mishle is all about. Once you see the idea and you realize its implications, you have natural motivation to have a good life. So you'll take note of the wisdom of the pasuk, and you'll be more aware, psychologically aware. And you'll try to, you know, deal with it. Be aware of your unconscious factors. Look, you have to learn a little psychology in order to assist you in how to recognize. You get good at it over time about how to recognize the cause of an unconscious hatred. You know, you have to, you know, but it doesn't always have to be unconscious. These things, it could be. That's just the greatest expression of them. But once you see the wisdom of the pasuk, then you're going to naturally want to be more aware so you don't suffer the consequences of ignoring it.
Does recognizing that the annoyance comes from hatred negate the annoyance, or do you just take further steps to solve it?
What's the question?
Like in your case, once you know that the being bothered by the noise is just caused by hatred, does that stop you from being annoyed in the first place, or do you need to do something else to stop it?
I mean, once you realize there's something else going on, and then you recognize what that causes, what's really bothering you, then you have different ways of dealing with it. There's just many different options. Either you can try to talk to the person, or you could realize that it's, you know, something like very often. Then you could philosophically do tshuva. You could say, you know what, it really v'haftarecha kamocha. There's a sense to the pasuk of why it doesn't really make a difference whether one person's good. One person's good, if he has more, it doesn't affect me. And that's, you know, jealousy is based on certain philosophical ideals that don't really make sense. And you could work it through in your mind, and you could realize, you know, it's a low sase. You could realize the harm that comes to you by being jealous of somebody. You know, you could be, then you could start to talk to yourself, you know what, I did that to him the other year. You know, I did the same thing. I annoyed him, right? By my construction, I annoyed him, and he's doing it to me. It's just, that's just the way of the world. So you can, you know, if you don't, you don't always have to talk to the person. Sometimes you can, once it's conscious, you can work it out philosophically, and the hatred will go away that way. You can have an outlet through philosophical thinking. You're able to, you don't always have to, it doesn't always have to have,
confrontation.
Yeah, it doesn't have to lead to confrontation. It doesn't always have to have an unhappy ending. You could sometimes redirect that energy to something else. Like you could sublimate. You could sublimate. Sublimate means you take the energy that was going towards hatred and aggression, and you could kind of sublimate it towards other things by using it in a more productive method of, you know, either hating bad guys. You know, there's such a thing as bad guys, and you should hate them and do something about them, right? You could redirect energy onto other objects, or you could sublimate to different types of thing, like conquering. You know, conquering something, conquering an area of Torah can be a sublimation for aggression. This is a little bit more sophisticated, this thing. But the main point is, once you're aware of something, then there's, you're an adult. You're an adult, and you have a lot of creative ways of dealing with options once you're aware of them. But when you're not aware of the hatred and the aggression, then you're a child. It's in the unconscious. The unconscious is the child's mind. And in the unconscious, you have very few options. You really have one or two go-to methods of dealing with problems. The way you dealt with it as a kid. The way you dealt with your aggression as a kid, either you started a fight or you made fun of them behind their back. You have a very limited bag of tools when you're a kid and how to deal with problems. And when something is unconscious, you use that limited bag of tools. It's like one or two methods. Your general defense methods of dealing things, your general way of dealing with aggression. You have very few ways of how you deal with it. And very often it's a predictable pattern that you'll fall into. But that's when it's unconscious. Then you're dealing with your child's mind, the mind, the child inside of you, and you're dealing with a very limited variety of ways of discharging the aggression, the hatred. But once you make it conscious, well, you're an adult now, and you have a much more creative, varied ways, healthier ways, and more productive endings of dealing with things. So there's no go-to method. Is depends on situation, depends on your personality. You know, is in general, and I'd say always, the when you make something conscious, you'll have much better ways of dealing with it that are good for you, that will satisfy you and will cause you less negative consequences, and in fact could be lead to good things. But you have to make it conscious, you have to be aware of it in order for you to have access to that bag of tools. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, any questions from the guys on the phone? No. Okay, good. So you know what? Maybe next time, I don't know if we should start this one. Let me just take up one little, the Rabbeinu Yonah on this pshat, and we'll save for next time Rashi's pshat and Perek Chaf and Yecheska, which Rashi mentions. There's an interesting, very interesting perek. It has to do with the Chayit of Klal Yisrael, its whole history. That parsha, if you look through it, Perek Chaf and Yecheska goes through. It'll be apropos to the 9 days in Tisha B'Av anyway. So maybe we'll save it for that. And so let me just take up one other point that Rabbeinu Yonah mentioned, and then we'll stop. Okay. So Rabbeinu Yonah on this pasuk says like this. Sinah to Oer Madanim. Right, so hatred awakens fighting, causes fighting, stirs up, quarrels. He says, Gam ki pasha lo chavero. Right? B'maisa v'hen alav. So even if he's going to end the pasuk, Akol p'shem t'chas ava. So if your friend really does something wrong to you, and you and he really afflicts you, lo yiveyu v'lo yiskotit imo. You're not going to argue with him, you're not going to get into fights. And you cover up all his transgressions with your because of your love for him. Al Kain, So it gives you a practical lesson to take from this. Al kein adam yizahir min midas asena hameviya el hakas ve'amadon. So he's saying a person should be careful for the mida, the character trait of hatred, because it's hatred is going to cause you to get angry, and it's going to cause you to fight. So you think that what's the difference if I hate somebody? What's the difference? But he's saying, but like we said, hatred needs to find an expression. And if you hate somebody, then all these little things, you're going to constantly be getting angry. Right? The little things, the sound of that hammer going is going to make me angry. I can't sleep. So it's going to, the anger is going to bother you. Anger ruins your life. It disturbs your equilibrium. You're not going to be able to learn. You're not going to be able to sleep. It's going to bother you. So you think the hatred for another guy, whatever, what do I care if I hate the other guy? He's a jerk. Yeah, but now that hatred, all these different things that the other guy is going to do when you relate to him, it's going to drive you crazy. You're going to get angry, right? The hatred is going to lead to anger, and it's going to lead to fighting and quarreling, and these are the kinds of things. Hate, anger and fighting is going to ruin its motzias adam and olam, right? Tachros and kas, and these things ruin a person's life. Right? A person is constantly angry at somebody else, or little things bother them. Those types of people who repress their anger, and they're always angry, their life stinks. They can't enjoy their life. They're always fighting with other people. They're always angry. So you should be aware, the pasuk is teaching you, that the cause of the anger is hatred. Right? That's why you're angry, and why you're fighting is because there's a sin, there's a hatred of somebody else. Now, of course, you have to deal with how do you stop yourself from hating another person. That he hasn't explained. That's not the point of this pasuk, according to Ben Yonah. Okay, but showing you what's the cause of hatred. The hatred is not just an emotion that has no end. Hatred seeks satisfaction and ends up in fighting and anger. Okay. V'gam yizahir adam miyoslo kol esek imasone. And now, if you do hate somebody, then your best bet is to avoid any kind of involvement with them. V'yivchar maso umatano ima oiv. And if you're going to have to do business dealings with somebody, make sure you like them. Okay, don't think that if you hate somebody, you can make a partnership with them, you do business with them, because it's not going to work. Because your hatred is going to interfere with your interactions with him, and you're going to think he's screwing you, he's stealing from you, or he's not being honest, or it's going to drive you crazy. You're going to get angry, you're going to get into fights, the partnership's going to fall away. Just because monetarily something makes sense, if you really don't like the person, then that business partnership is going to fall apart. It's going to break down. You're not going to be able to maintain simply for the practical. If you don't deal with the underlying psychological emotions, you're not going to be able to maintain a relationship with him purely based upon the practical. You tell yourself, look, let's just ignore the fact that I don't like him when he does wrong because I'll make money in this deal. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to find some outlet for that aggression, that hatred, and it's going to end up causing you to fight and get angry and you end up losing money and the whole deal. You're going to have to break off the partnership, sell the building at a loss. It's going to be a bad idea. But if you love somebody and you enter into a partnership with them, it's much more stable because even if they do something wrong, you're going to want to overlook it. It's going to be very easy for you to overlook that. And it'll be a much more stable relationship. Okay, he's it's interesting. He's not looking as Yaakov Hashem Dechas Ava as a flaw. As like you're not going to be honest about a person's flaws, and that might come to harm you. That's one thing that is true, but he's showing you that there's a positive. Is sometimes it's you want to have developed stable relationships with people. The best way to develop a stable relationship is if you love them, you're going to be willing to overlook things that they do wrong, because everybody does things wrong over time. And in order for that relationship not to fracture, when there really is serious transgressions between two people. If they love each other, they're willing to overlook it because they want to maintain that relationship, right? So if people are going to be married to each other, you want that to be a stable relationship. Love is a critical ingredient. If you have love, that relationship will be stable. Without the love, eventually they're just going to end up, things go wrong, and they're going to notice the real problems the other person has. But the love is like, it's the glue that keeps the relationship together because it allows you, the couple, to overlook each other's flaws. So there is a value in when you form a relationship, either it's a spouse or it's a business partner, that you want to have positive feelings towards the person. It shouldn't just be a totally practical relationship, because and it certainly shouldn't be one which has negative feelings between you, because that undermines the stability of a relationship. Right? Stability of a relationship is much more predicated upon the underlying psychological transference between the two people, whether they love each other or hate each other, their underlying emotional relationship to each other, and very little to do with the practical significance of the relationship. A practically important relationship is very hard to sustain if there's hatred. Much easier to sustain with love. That doesn't mean, you know, like we said, even though, you know, two people hate each other, they can stay in a relationship. They'll be miserable. They'll fight all the time. They'll be angry. But they'll go through this cycle of fighting, and that will alleviate it until it builds up again. You know, usually, though, it's not a stable situation. Usually, eventually, it breaks down. Right, so it's the primary determinant in whether people are able to function together is not like the mundane, practical, pragmatic way of thinking about things. People are not so rational that it makes sense to stay in this relationship, in a business relationship, because it benefits me practically. Far and away, the most important thing is the underlying emotional connection between the two people. And if they have a good emotional connection, then the flaws are irrelevant. And if they have a bad connection, then any little thing, which inevitably is there, will break up the relationship. Okay, it's a little different perspective of Ben Yonah than we were saying before. Okay, he's more advocating, finding, associating with people you like, which is an obvious point to a certain extent, that of course you want to associate with people you like. But I think he's saying something a little deeper, is not just because you have more fun with them, but because there's a lack of stability in a relationship that's where there's aggression, hatred between the two parties. It's not going to last well. It can't be overcome by purely practical reasoning, that it's functional and practical. Okay, so you want this agreed. It assists a relationship. If you have an underlying fondness for a friend, a partner, a relationship, right? All these different things. Good?
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? No? Okay.
You have to figure out what the framework for the plastic is, right?
Right.
So, and the nearest deity seems like these circum usually pretty vague. So, how do you go about doing that?
I mean, what's like the methodology for figuring out the psukkah? Well, yeah. One way is you're reading the Rishonim.
Right.
I mean, now the Mitzvahs is pretty much was kind of pointed us right away to.
So, how do they do it?
Yeah. I mean, look, there's. Like I said, I'm not.
If you're sure.
Well,
it's an understanding of psychology and approaching it through a.
Yeah, psychology definitely helps.
Behavioral analysis.
Maybe. Yeah, that's for sure.
There are many aspects of psychology. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's like a method. You'll as you do more psukim, it's like anything else. You know, you can't. How are you going to learn how? Somebody can't tell you how to learn a Gemara, and then you're going to go sit down and learn a Gemara. By doing it, learning Gemara, you pick up the method over time, you know. But obviously, it's more to that. But by doing psukim, going through them, trying to understand them, you pick up certain things, certain approaches. But I can give you, for example, very often, a general question you're going to want to ask yourself is, what's the relationship between the two parts of the pasuk? That's a very common thing in Mishlei. Very often there's a beginning of the pasuk and the end of the pasuk, a lot of them. Especially from chapter 10 to like, I don't know, to like 30 or something, 29. So it's like each pasuk is almost a separate pasuk. From Perek Yod to Chaf Tes, I think it is. You know, just every pasuk is almost independent, can be analyzed independently. Sometimes you get two pasukim together, where the Shonar pointed out they're related. But in general, they're not really. Like, they're grouped together, like Tzaddik in Russia is like a group of psukim, or the lazy guy versus the diligent guy is in one pasuk, or the fool and the wise man. It's like groups of psukim will be found together, but generally each pasuk will be independent. But the two halves of the pasuk are related to each other. So you want to find out, is it contrasting the two halves? Are they opposites? And when they are opposites, you want to... Are they parallel, or is there something different about one half than the other half? A very key idea is you want to take the two halves of the pasuk and try to see what's the underlying unity between the pasuk. What's the inyan of the pasuk? But taking the two halves separately and then trying to find, like, what's it talking about? What's the area that the pasuk is dealing with? that kind of unifies the framework that's the that both halves of the pasuk are dealing with.
Right.
You know, you want to be to see the different translations available. You know, it's written in a cryptic way because it lends itself to multiple interpretations. You don't want to be fixed, stuck in a translation. You want to have a certain flexibility such that as you develop your idea, you can reinterpret the pasuk. You know, you start off interpreting the pasuk, then you reinterpret, then you, as you understand it, you go back and you tweak your translation. There's an interplay between translating the pasuk and then understanding the idea of the pasuk, and then going back and retranslating it, and then seeing the nuances in it, you know. But but like, I'm not really a, you know, Mishlei master. Is if you really want to know, you listen to a few shiurim by either I. Moskowitz, or if you read Matt Schneeweis, he has a blog that he does these. You know, he has, you know, history there of the different psukim. A lot of his Mishlei, and you see the methodology. It's like anything else. You want a combination of learning from somebody else who knows how to learn, you know, knows how to learn Mishlei, and then. And then hearing a few shears, reading a few of, you know, I guess they're Moskowitz or Matt are two people who I learned from, you know, and then doing it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, they're good. They're good to like just take a pasuk with you. If you're driving in a car, it's like very, just take a pasuk, get the pasuk down, 6 words, 7 words usually, and you think about it. And it's very practical and it really affects your life. So it's very, it's like, you know, as you do each pasuk, you open it up, you start to realize, this is like, how did I not know this before? And they're usually not so deep and abstract that they're, you know, that's the way Moscow says that Tosos is much more abstract and deep than a pasuk in Mishlei. Do you know Mishlei is it's true? Do you think Shlomo Melech, it's the Chacham Mikol Adam, he's a genius, but you think Mishlei must be this incredibly deep wisdom that's abstract, and you know it's not abstract like a Tosos, like a Gemara. Gemara is much more abstract thinking. Formulations and definitions, much more abstract. Mishlei is very straightforward. It's like, look, it's basic ideas about life and consequences and psychology. It's not the abstractness of it that makes it difficult. It's the emotional blocks you have to recognizing it in yourself, oftentimes. And it's like the newness of the area. You don't think, it's like a way of thinking that you have to develop. But like once you develop that way of thinking and looking at the world, like Mishlei looks at the world, you realize the idea is there. It's much simpler to learn Mishlei than it is to learn Gemara. Much simpler. It's not abstract metaphysics, Mishlei. It's basic psychological insights, practical insights into the world, into yourself, with other people. And it's like it's the foundation of a healthy, happy life is really Mishlei. You know, but, you know, you have to say, you learn from somebody else, pick it up, try it yourself, and you'll realize it's fun. It's interesting and it's fun.
Right.